This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on March the 22nd, 2007. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next item on our agenda involves the Commission's policy statement regarding internal controls. And we have both Mr. Stoltz from the Audit Division and Ms. Maisonette from the Staff Director's Office. Mr. Stoltz, would you like to begin?
I will. Good morning. As the Commission knows, we have been seeing over the last couple of election cycles what appears to be a marked increase of incidences where committee staff are embezzling funds from their employers. We also note that in many cases, internal accounting controls that would be probably more common in the business world are not often in place in the political world. So a while back, it was suggested that perhaps we prepare a piece that would provide committees some advice about instituting some controls to protect themselves. And out of that also came a suggestion that a safe harbor policy be developed, which would specify minimum controls that if they were in fact in place and an embezzlement did occur, the commission would not hold the committee liable for the misreporting that often accompanies these. Those two documents are before you today. The first is entitled Safe Harbor. The second is Internal Controls and Political Committees. They were put out on the Commission's website for comment. We received 10 separate comments, some of them signed by multiple commenters. They were mostly supportive of the effort. There were several people who particularly liked the safe harbor concept. There were those who contend that political committees are too small, they can't be expected to use the same sorts of controls and checks and balances that businesses do. However, as the chairman noted on the last issue, the amount of money running through the political process these days is huge and growing. And I think as the business grows, some of the business practices are going to need to grow with it. However, nothing in these documents requires anybody to do anything. They are free to use whatever pieces of it they care to use, to decide against any of it they care to decide against. It's simply advice, at least for the Internal Control and Political Committee document. The Safe Harbor document likewise doesn't require anybody to do anything, but it does provide committees an opportunity to protect themselves should something happen. The comments also frequently suggested that these controls be flexible, that no one set was going to work for everybody, and that's certainly true. No one set works for every business, no one set works for every government agency, and no one set is going to work for every political committee. We have tried to make it clear in the documents that flexibility is recognized, the need for it is recognized, and that committees are free to set it up however best suits their operation. There are a number of miscellaneous comments concerning whether this needed to be a regulation. Again, it's advice and it's a safe harbor. Nobody's required to do anything. There are a number of other small suggestions that were made. I will say we got a number of very constructive suggestions, and many of them have been incorporated in the final version of the document, and certainly appreciate the thought that went into it by all of the commenters. The Safe Harbor document, which begins on the fourth page of the agenda document, there has been a suggestion by the Office of General Counsel that it include at the end a standard policy statement disclaimer that appears on the end of all of our policy statements, and I would certainly recommend that we include that. Council will also, I think, assist in reformatting this particular piece to be published in the Federal Register. On the internal controls and political committees document, I understand that Commissioner Von Spakovsky has a suggestion for paragraph 2, which I would be more than happy to accept. It is in the second paragraph of paragraph 2, or second sentence of paragraph 2, which now reads, "To that end, the Commission has prepared the following discussion to assist committees in protecting their assets and complying with the requirements of the FECA." And as amended would read, "To that end, the Commission has prepared the following best practice recommendations, period. These are not mandatory, but are intended to assist committees in protecting their assets and complying with the requirements of the FECA." With that, I will take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Stoltz. I think that was a very clear and helpful discussion of the document before us, and I would like to just reinforce one of your comments, which, you know, and it was true in the sus ponte policy as well, of how much we appreciate public comment. It is not simply a form or a ritual that we have to go through. We've gotten a number of these matters, very, very helpful comment from the outside. I know that it is, in some cases, time-consuming, and in other cases, expensive for people to do that. And I think both in this document and in the sua sponte document, you can see instances where it actually changes outcomes, where people with different perspectives and different, with a different understanding of how these regulations or rules or policies will impact different kinds of organizations, provide insight into the consequences of the language we choose. And I think that is enormously helpful to us, and we really appreciate it, and especially given an understanding on my part, and I think a number of the Commission's parts, that can be expensive, and it's a voluntary decision on the part of individuals or organizations to do that, and we do appreciate those. When people do it. Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Mr. Chairman, I want to pick up on that and say we've gone through a lot of policies. All of these are important, but this one is, I think, particularly important because this was generated by several of the commissioners, and the reason for it was that we had a number of cases in the past year where we were fining political committees who had misreported. The misreporting was due to the fact that, and they didn't realize this, some of their employees were embezzling funds. And naturally, I mean, many of the political committees were frankly shocked, and they thought it was unfair for us to be fining them. Now, in all of those cases, the fines that we put on the people who actually embezzled the funds were, of course, much larger. And the fines that were imposed on the political committees were considerably lessened from what they would have been. But the reason that in some of these cases they were fined was because when we went in and looked at the cases, we found that these committees had not put in very basic financial controls that might have prevented the embezzlement. But it was tough. Because we don't have a policy on this, it was frankly hard, I think, for some of these committees to understand that and understand why it was that they were being fined. And so what we're doing here is we're setting out a policy, and the safe harbor is particularly important because what it says to these committees is if you put in place these minimum financial safeguards, then even if they don't work and someone still embezzles funds from you, we're not going to fine you for having misreported funds because you did what you needed to do to try to protect yourself from this, and you're not then responsible for the fact that someone still broke the law and embezzled funds for you. And so all these committees now, you know, not only have a guide to what they need to do to prevent this, but I think now they will be able to understand, if they don't do this, why it is that they're getting fined, despite the fact that they were victims of what is basically criminal activity.
Thank you. Other comments? Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you. Well, I want to thank Mr. Stoltz for his hard work in doing this and for his responsiveness to my request, which may have been one of the one of the things that prompted getting this before us. To emphasize, as Joe has and my colleagues, that these are voluntary steps, but they're steps meant to protect the political committees and the political committees' donors. And let me say, I have been reluctant all along in fining committees that have been victims of embezzlement. And generally speaking, organizations that are victims of employees' misconduct are held responsible by other civil enforcement agencies, financial regulatory agencies, such as those regulating banks, publicly traded corporations, for instance, only where the company itself has somehow failed in its duty to reasonably supervise its employees. And so I thought it was important for us to lay out, in essence, what we thought the duties of the campaign committees were in that regard if we were going to continue down this road. That said, let me say that, and I know there's concern on the part of some of the people who commented about, gee, this is just too tough for political committees to do. And if that's their view, they're free to continue to pursue that. I don't really share it. And some of the internal control weaknesses that we've seen are sort of beyond explanation or beyond excuse. In one case that we have in-house now, it was an embezzlement by an employee, which the employee was able to continue in a pattern over a period of 4 or 5 years, because for a period of 4 years or more, no one reconciled the committee's bank statements to its FEC reports. Now, if committees are simply unwilling to do that and simply want to hand something off to a single employee for 4 or 5 years and have nobody ever look over that employee's shoulder, then I think we've gotten beyond the point where we can say, well, gee, this committee was a victim, because what happened in that circumstance is the committee set up circumstances which allowed itself to become a victim, and that's the sort of circumstance that leads me to conclude, if that's what's going on, that the committee is at least in part responsible for the misreporting that occurred because they hadn't bothered to look at their internal books for that long period of time. The second element is how often this is happening. This is not once every few year thing, but at least in recent times has been several times every election cycle. In a couple of cases, it has been, we had a candidate in New Hampshire a couple of years ago who pulled out of the race following a series of embezzlements. We've had some others where this may well have influenced the outcome of the race. And so for the candidate's own protection, I would assume they would want to do some of this. And then on the particulars of the proposal, I have discussed with my colleagues and want to put out for further discussion today the dual signature requirement. And let me note first that we've had 3 or 4 cases very recently which involved a series of embezzlements by an employee over a period of time. And in all of those cases, the embezzlements have been relatively small amounts. In fact, interestingly, in several of those cases, amounts around $1,000 per transaction. In my view, for that reason, if the two signature requirement is to have a value, we ought to go ahead and use $1,000 threshold. I recognize that the flexible threshold, the 0.5% of anticipated annual disbursements, is in response to some of the comments, and I'm concerned about that, both because I think it allows or it moves that threshold for many committees well above the level at which we have had demonstrated problems in the past. And that is to say, for $1 million annual committee, which would hardly be unusual these days, the threshold requirement would be $5,000. And yet we've seen the problem seems to be at amounts much lower than that. Secondly, because I think a straight dollar threshold is simply easier to administer. If a committee is looking and saying what their anticipated annual disbursements are, I'm not sure how they're going to know with any certainty. They're not going to know with any certainty how much that amount is. And while I agree as to the overall point about flexibility and about controls having to correspond to the committee's size and sophistication, I don't think a standard of this sort is particularly helpful, especially in the context of a safe harbor where I don't want to have to go back and start looking at their annual requirements and how they administered their dual signature requirements. So I would be more comfortable with a $1,000 threshold than with this flexible provision. I'd also note that I understand that some of the commenters are concerned that this would involve routine payroll checks, rent payments, and so on like that. I actually assume that for the larger committees, they're going to have an easier time complying with the two-signature requirement because they're actually going to have staffs out there available to do this sort of thing. And so I'm not sure that it is, in effect, going to be a more significant burden for the larger committees. But I also note that this is a policy statement, and therefore it would be relatively easy to adjust. If after some relatively short period this is simply too complex to comply with, it would be a lot easier than a regulation to come back and adjust that threshold. And in particular, if, for instance, payroll checks need some kind of special treatment, we could come back and take a look at that at some point in the future.
Okay. Thank you very much. Comments on the Vice Chairman's thoughts on this? Silence is acquiescence in some environments. I think that the I think all of you raise a number of good points. This certainly, I think, my impression was added in response to the comments. And one of the things that we have obviously been struggling with here is to try and make sure that we set forth in this safe harbor environment things which will actually serve as safeguards to reduce the risk of embezzlement, things that seem like the minimal protections that need to be in place, and yet also choose ones that are in fact practical and workable. And I think Mr. Stoltz has done and his staff have done an excellent job in sort of a longer and more detailed document talking about the different kinds of factors that different kinds of committees can take into consideration in deciding what sort of controls they put in place. I think any other thoughts on this? Commissioner Vospikowski.
I have a question for Mr. Stoltz, if I may. How did you come up with the recommendation for $1,000 as being the floor? I mean, is this based on, as the vice chairman mentioned, some of the embezzlement cases we had and the average size of the checks that were, the amounts that were stolen, or is this also based on in your auditing experience, you know, looking at the kind of disbursements and expenditures that these various committees make and the average size of the kind of disbursements that they make?
Originally, it was, in the original document, it was used as an example. And, $1,000 is on the low end, I think. As Commissioner Mason says, in a lot of cases, these folks write themselves fairly large numbers of modest-sized checks. And so it is a combination of a number of factors. In hearing some of the comments, I think the concern was if we want people to adopt this, then we need to set it in some way where it is not administratively unattractive. And so this was an attempt to sort of walk the line between getting it down far enough that it would be effective, but not too low so that it becomes administratively unattractive for people to do it. I don't think there is one particularly right answer to it. Wherever we decide to set it is fine.
It is a difficult balance. Yes. Vice Chairman Mason.
I just want to discuss on the authorized in writing part, Joe, whether you interpret that, for instance, in the case of payroll disbursements to allow some sort of system that would authorize those to go out on a routine basis with a single signature pursuant to limitations laid out in a memorandum of some sort.
I think that would make sense, particularly in payroll for larger committees, because that's, you know, particularly you start looking at people like presidential campaigns who may have a payroll with well in excess of 100 people on them. It could be a bit of a burden.
And presumably the same might be true for routine and predictable disbursements, such as a rent payment, which is going to come due every month. It's going to be a certain amount that a memorandum authorizing that payment of that amount to be issued each month on a single signature would suffice for that and for other similar routine recurring payments.
I would think that makes sense. Particularly, and of course, with controls like this, it's a system and it has to work together. Particularly if we are also in a situation where somebody other than the people writing checks are also going through the bank statements and doing the reconciliation, which means that if there are two rent payments that month and one of them is made payable to somebody else, it's not going to go undetected for more than a very short period of time.
Okay. Mr. Vice Chairman?
I don't want to cut off other discussion or questions, but if there isn't any, I would move adoption of the document, except that we would, in the internal control section, after the $1,000, we would delete the words or 0.5% of anticipated annual disbursements, that we would add the disclaimer statement. The normal disclaimer statement is recommended by the Office of General Counsel. The amendment is previously outlined, recommended by Commissioner Von Spakovsky, and authorize the Office of General Counsel to make any necessary formatting or technical or other changes appropriate to publication.
Mr. Stoltz?
I think we would probably also want to conform the political committees and internal controls document on the 0.5%. I don't think we want
Yes.
two different things in the different places. So
yes,
I'll make the same change there.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Stoltz. The Vice Chairman has so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. Thank you very much, Mr. Stoltz. We appreciate your efforts on this.